Welcome to Gin and Tantra, spirituality with a twist. The podcast that takes tantrism, Buddhism, Taoism, Sufism, Kabbalism, Shamanism, Chinese medicineism, and all of the other isms we've been influenced by, and blends them into a tall, crisp, cool cocktail your spirit has been longing for.
I want you to get together.
Now, isn't that refreshing?
I want you to get together.
Hello, everybody. Thanks for tuning in to Gin and Tantra, spirituality with a twist. Eric has the night off tonight. We will keep him in our prayers. He has a little bit of a family thing going on, so he is unable to join us, but we are joined by one of our returning guests, a returning contestant, if you will. She has earned many winnings previously on Ghetto Jeopardy, Priscilla Lang. Priscilla, thanks for joining us again. Good to see you.
Thanks for having me.
Yes, of course. So, you know, just a little bit of behind the scenes, because we'd like to go behind the scenes, because sometimes they're fun to see when you're watching a movie. We had planned a record for tonight, but like I mentioned, something came up for Eric, and so he was unable to join. And so I was just talking with Priscilla before I came on here, and I was like, oh man, I really would like to, you know, have somebody jump on, but who would do it last minute? And she's like, I don't know, who would? And I said, well, would you? And she said, yeah, of course. I said, all right, cool. So here we are. So thanks for coming on. Yeah, and I like the background for those who are watching on YouTube, you know, all the things, right? Like, comment, subscribe. I always say that at the end, but I want to put it in the front because people's attention spans are so short, to be totally honest. Like, I could see the analytics that, like, our videos are about an hour-ish, sometimes 45, sometimes an hour 15, but, like, the average duration of viewing is, like, 4 minutes. So thanks for tuning in, as always. If you like our work, share what we're doing. If you're watching on the YouTube, leave a comment. We always get back to people. Hit us up, ginandtantra@gmail.com. Hit us up on Instagram, the Gin and Tantra podcast. Or, you know, like I said, on the YouTube. So anyways, with all that to the side here, I want to get to our topic today. So we have been discussing these kind of, we call them 9 things that could fuck up your life, or 9 obstacles to enlightenment, as they are probably more traditionally translated as in the Taoist texts. We're taking a little break from that tonight and moving in a slightly different direction that maybe we will continue moving forward, and we might illuminate this topic again. But I wanted to open it up for Priscilla to talk about, and as well as myself. And so I've mentioned this before, but in basic Buddhist teachings, there's something known as the 3 jewels. And these are, what are the 3 jewels? We've talked about them before. They're known as the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. And just as a, you know, brief refresher, Buddha is kind of like not just the Buddha as a historical figure. This is the sort of external component of the 3 jewels, as you could imagine somebody having 3 gems, you know, 2 emeralds and a diamond, or whatever kind of jewels you're into. But then you have the internal aspects of them. And so the Buddha in this case is referencing one's own spirit, or as we like to talk about it here on the show, in the sort of Chinese word, one's Shen, one's, I don't know, Christ nature, one's seed of enlightenment, or is there a better word, soul? I don't know. Is there another word that you would use for that?
I literally think you're hitting them all.
Okay.
Okay. For sure. Higher self. I don't.
Okay. That's a good one.
I don't know. Like, thinking like all the things, like, I feel like everybody relates differently, but yeah, like that thing that's like,
The Atman, you know, whatever.
Okay.
I got more than a couple. All right. So Buddha, this is the Buddha, and then Dharma, many translations, I guess. Externally, you can look at it as they call them the teachings of Buddha. So that externally, this would be the information that he passed down, or he transmitted, I guess maybe I could say, or transferred, if you will. So teachings on enlightenment, teachings on compassion, teachings on knowledge, teachings on practice, teachings on all the different things, teachings in general. And we did an episode a long time ago, within the first year, we said, what's your type? And we were talking about teachings, the way in which you can be taught. And as they mention teachers as one method, teachings as like written stuff that stands outside of the teacher, because once the teacher passes away, they're gone. books as a means of teachings, and then life as your guru, as the teacher, you know? So this is sort of Dharma. So it's a faceted description of this. And the last part, the one that we're going to talk about more today, or we'll at least open the conversation, is the Sangha. And the Sangha is the community. And in the Buddhist tradition, it's referred to in this way. And probably in the Christian tradition or the Catholic tradition, I think they talk about it as like maybe the congregation, something like this, right? This is a way of talking about it. Or you could say one's kind of spiritual community, you know? And so this is kind of what we're going to be discussing today, and the importance of it. And we like to be fair and balanced, like how Fox used to be. No, I'm just kidding. They were never fair or balanced, but that was the logo. That was the acronym or motto they had. But we want to be fair and balanced because, just because it's a, something is a spiritual teaching doesn't mean it only has positives to it. There are also downsides to that, and we definitely want to highlight these. So, if this topic interests you, then please continue to listen or watch or both. And if it doesn't, then you can hang up now and call back next week and see what we got. So, with that as a lead-in, Mary Kay, our good friend Mary Kay, who's been on the show many times and will be on again hopefully in the next month or so, she loves to introduce things with a definition. And so we will give a rough definition, and then I will give plenty of analogies throughout the rest of the conversation about this. But a working definition of Sangha outside of just spiritual community, I love the way that they put this here. It says a community of practice, right? So you will have your own internal practice, and then that is supported by the other people around you. And this is like an extension on that definition that like Sangha is an external support of our own internal practice via other people. And I want to open up, chance for you to speak here, but because Priscilla was raised very different than me, and probably different than many people, in that she was grown up tightly knit within a local church community, which had its pros and cons. But growing up, what were some of the positive attributes? I don't mean to make this like an interview, but like, I want you to speak. So like, what were some of the positive attributes that you had from your Sangha that you were familiar with?
Well, I mean, it was like, so my grandparents went to this church and congregation, and then my family went. So, there was a sense of like family. Like we met them there every Sunday, and it's like Sunday morning, Sunday night, and Wednesday. So you're going 3 days a week. You're like meeting in this place. And there's like a sense of family and community, like you said. And then we were really active involved in like going to the potlucks. So like the congregation has like potlucks where everybody cooks a meal, and like we set out like the big tables, and it's kind of like you get in the big line and you fill your plate up, and all the kids get together and play at the end of the potluck and run around in the Sunday school rooms. And I went to Sunday school from the time I was born until all the way through middle school and high school. It's like very much a part of my life, and so I think that like the consistency of it maybe, and that real sense of like there's like a congealedness of family, even though like we didn't live with my grandparents and we lived by them, like seeing them every Sunday a day on Sundays and every Wednesday. And that led for other opportunities where like we were spending the night on the weekends, or we were having family dinner after Sunday morning church. And so like I don't know, like it felt like there's a stability where like you're around your family and you're seeing your older grandparents and your younger kids your age. So I don't think people are raised like that anymore, honestly. Like even my kids, I have a 6-year-old and or a 7-year-old and a 5-year-old. Like I mean, they don't run around with friends or have friends like that. Like we're not. I mean, it's much different now. More spread out. More everybody's isolated and lives in their houses. And maybe that's just me. I'm not running to birthday parties every weekend. Some people do that, but I know it's just different. Like I said, there was meaningfulness to it too. It wasn't like I know a lot of people are busy with like birthday parties every weekend going around, but like there was this like quality sense of like this group of people that we were like eating with and communing with on these 2 days, or 2 times a week on Sundays and then Wednesday evenings, so. It was a really, a solid foundation, like I felt like it began a journey. Some like I was understanding like there's an importance of like seeing life at all spectrum. Like when you're in a community like that and you're seeing babies and then you're seeing older people. So like going to a congregation, you see people of all ages and then kind of all walks of life too, because everybody's still living their own life and they're getting together. And so you get that a little bit of that experience by seeing, people bring like pregnant women bring babies into the world, and then you're seeing people, kids in the nursery, and you're seeing younger kids and then older kids. And so you get that exposure to all of this different, like these age groups basically, and the evolution of life and the circle of it, So,
It's more communal. It has a, a tribe kind of feeling where people are ingrained in each other's lives, helping. I remember you had, and I don't mean to share if you could tell me to stop, but I remember you mentioned talking about getting clothes when you were younger.
Yeah,
That
in the
like,
youth group, people that are older than you, they just like bag up their clothes and like you just pass them around. So like, yeah, for sure, definitely like a sense of community that way too. Like there was no judgment on hand-me-downs. That's like that sense of sharing food and bringing food. And it's like, sometimes people could bring two dishes, sometimes people could bring a small one. Like, nobody's judging or caring. There's a real sense of like community.
And I think, while I was thinking about what we should talk about, and the other thing that this is part of it, but one of the things both you and I do is, we teach yoga, and we have been teaching yoga for, years at this point. I mean, you've been teaching, I don't know, at least what, 12, 13 years at least.
15. It's
Yeah,
like a long
15.
time.
Yeah.
So
Yeah, I'm coming up on 9, so I got a
long.
while yet.
You're doing great though.
No, thank you. But the thing about it is that like, you get to see the gathering of people in a shared practice on a very regular basis. And I think even more so than in oral teachings, the practice of yoga is a physical one. And so people are, we're always working on our own issues via whatever medium. So if that medium is oral, mental, or if in this case in the yoga class or an exercise class, but we're going to keep it to yoga because it has a more spiritual component to it. At least it can. It doesn't have to, but it can. That they're working on themselves via the body, and there you can see people's limitations because they're more, some are more flexible, some are less flexible, some are stronger, some have better balance, some have worse balance. Like there's all these various facets that people have that totally give away aspects to their personality, and how they deal with success and more often than not frustration when they can or cannot do something. They're unable to hold something or touch this part of their body or whatever the case is, and you see how they deal with this, and it's a peek, it's a window into their mind, into their kind of hearts. And so in this way, other people see the same thing as well, and so you have to be aware of yourself in this case. And so I wanted to bring that up because, to your point, there is not that much of that kind of a thing available today. There are many, many communities and many communities, and certainly Facebook, and we absolutely shit on social media all the time, and we will continue to do so because it is a virus, but some viruses cause the species to evolve. And so, not all viruses should be eliminated. I can agree with that. However, for many people without strong immune systems, viruses can be very bad. And so in this case, I could say that Facebook has taken advantage of this need for human beings to be in community, and there's, tons of various groups of all kinds of, I mean, you name it, hula hoopers, gong players, Tesla enthusiasts, Volkswagen bug mechanics. I mean, if you like something, I promise there's a Facebook group that's for it. But we're communal creatures, actually, like without a doubt. We are not the dominant species. The various other species of humans that came before the Homo sapiens were bigger and stronger, according to modern scientific theory, of course. But we were the smart little monkeys who work together. you know, and that's how we were able to survive. And so there is this inherent need for people to want to work together, want to come together, and we have been successful because of that. And so I like to bring this back up because it crosses a number of different lines for me. One of which is that it's kind of shamanic in practice, and that some of the tendencies that we have as beings are inherited and are also inherent. Those are words close together that sound good when you're saying them out loud. That it is part of who we are. But then simultaneously, it is how we've been successful. You know what I'm saying? And so one of the other, I like analogies, you know? So I like that what they mentioned in this article that I'll probably link to the podcast so people can read it. But they say that the Sangha or the community is the soil and we are the seeds. And we as the seeds get to grow because of the collective energy of people's input, i.e. the soil nourishing the seed. And I just, I really like that. And I, you know, wanted to give you a opportunity to, you know, speak on this idea for a moment.
Oh, man, so I literally, my mind was exploding and I'm on the spot. And I'm like so crippled.
Oh, that
I wanted
happens.
To ask you, I wanted to ask you a question actually. So
yeah, yeah,
I was
yeah.
Like, you
anytime,
know,
stop me and ask me.
So as a cranial sacral therapist, like biodynamic especially, so I, you know, think of the embryo a lot and how we were formed, you know, like regardless of, you know, like if you're existing and you're hearing and listening to this or watching this podcast, you definitely grew, you know, like connected to another human being. Like that was your first experience. It's so much blueprinted in you to have a connection, like a deep
yeah.
connection. Like you were
yeah.
sharing blood, like heartbeats, you know, you're sharing like literal, like the pulse of life with another human being for, you know, 10 lunar cycles, you know? And so, you know, whether you like it or not, there's something that's so deeply ingrained in us to want to belong and be connected to something, you know? And it's a desire, it's a longing of our own heart, you know? And I think you kind of had an interesting point and just stop me if I'm getting off track. But, you know, when you said like, when you're talking about yoga classes and you see people, I think that's one of the blessings that community offers is that like, when you start to build a community, you're talking about seeing a certain person or a certain group of people, you know, consistently.
Yeah.
And you start to learn their like little ticks, right? And they're like little things. And it's nice to see these people unfolding because then you realize, because we can mirror off of each other, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think there's a tendency for us to judge ourselves or for us to, think that we're the only ones with a problem or something.
Sure.
And so I think community really reinforces that, like, yeah, everybody's in a different spot. Everybody gets dealt a different hand of cards. And to be able to support some people when they're down and when we're up, and then knowing that they're going to do the same for us, you know? And it feels really nice to know that like human life isn't just all uphill. Like success doesn't mean you're just going uphill or in a straight line. Like life is messy. There's
yeah.
lots of twists and turns and downhills, and having a community make sure that when there's a hole in the net, there's someone there to like grab and repair it. And, and we're all experiencing life at different levels so that this can happen, I think. So
yeah.
Kind of what I would say about that.
Yeah. Yeah. There is, again, I'll link this article, but, one of the things they made mention of is that like the community is created from the work of the individuals. And specifically in the Buddhist setting, they say that the work of the individuals is to help to support one's own mindfulness practice. So everybody practicing around you, like you said, kind of mirrors your practice. And so they're reminding you to do your thing while you're reminding them to do their thing. And then together, you're able to kind of have that resonance within each other. I think the other part, you know, as we have various, I don't know how to say it, like methods to which we do self-discovery. Is that ambiguous enough? Is that, you know, that the ability to have people who are relatively like-minded, I'm not saying an echo chamber, because I think people in like a church community or in any kind of spiritual community of any type, or even a book club, you know, you have a similar mindset in that you want to be in community. You want to open up yourself a little bit and discuss some things. they can provide you with an opportunity to work on some of your own personal issues in, I don't like to use the word safe, but we're going to say a safe setting, you know, and that you will be listened to and hopefully not judged immediately. You may be judged immediately, but like you can do, you have the opportunity to do that. So understandings, realizations, questions, obstacles, difficulties, you know, successes, you can bring those to those relationships with those people who are outside of your primary relationships and get different kind of feedback from people who have a similar mindset, but also different enough because they're not going to give you the benefit of the doubt all the time and ask different questions. So I think in this sense, like, one's community around them can represent another layer to their own development because everybody has a different piece of the pie, you know? And but we're all sharing in the same reality. Like you mentioned, being in an embryo, you're sharing with your mother in that case, food, oxygen. Like you're, there's no kind of separation. And this community is, you know, outside of your primary relationships is kind of like the next layer. To this thing. Does that make sense?
Yeah, for sure.
And so I talk about this a lot on the podcast because for me it's extremely important. You know, as you mentioned, things have become even in, you know, you're in the same town now that where you grew up in, and even though it's a similar town, it's far more dispersed. You said people are living in their own houses, you know. And after, you know, after the consolidation of during the pandemic, that is probably even more so that case. Of course, people have gone back to, you know, what we consider regular life, but there's many more things now that are done, you know, via Zoom for the better, right? Less travel, less waste, so on and so forth. But then there's a lot more people who work from home who probably shouldn't be, you know, and this isolates people further. And so I think the reintroduction of people to other people is an important aspect because we just don't have enough human contact. We're not reminded enough that there are other people. And so you can have, you know, armchair generals, you know, even like not to make it too meta, but like, you know, there's a lot of shit happening in the world. There always is, but you know, it seems like in particular, there's a lot that is going on currently. There's multiple wars, like large ones, you know, large military offensives. And people feel very, inspired to say some very, very hateful things about other people. I mean, they always do, but now even more so, you get the negatives to the sangha. You know, and we're gonna go there in just a moment. I want to still highlight some other positives before we do the dark side, you know. But people will say things, you know, that they would never say in person. And that's because they can other people so easily, because they're not part, you know, because they're behind a screen, or there's just an avatar of them, or because they're it's just a picture, or we count lives as numbers, or something like this. Does that resonate in your kind of experience?
Are you talking specifically about like the platform that like social media provides and like this way or
Yeah, well, I mean, that's how people communicate now. So, you know, whether it's social media or whether it's legacy news or various, you know, like news has changed too, right? Like by the time your kids are grown, there won't be news on TV like that anymore. That'll be strange to watch the news like this. You know, people get their news from so many different sources now that like having the big several networks that are kind of creating the narrative, those days are long. Those days are they're ending. You know, I mean, look at the demographic of people who even watch news now. It's just shifting to an older kind of style. So,
do you feel like this is do you feel like this is new though, really? Like, I mean, I only say because it's like I have friends that have like, for being proper or being in a way of like not wanting to like rock the boat or like make waves, walk on eggshells, but then, whenever you get them if I'm with them alone, they're able to express themselves
sure.
to me. And so like I feel like this is just a habit that like a lot of humanity has had, like this need to vent or whatever. But like, I mean, I agree, like whenever there's a platform or there's a way to go ahead and vent to like lots of people, there could be some like ego tripping or some sort of
Sure.
like, you know, power from it of some sort, like that
Yeah.
they feel really validated in their opinion or like they're super educated and gives them some sort of like, which I mean, whenever you talk about like whenever you're talking about community the way you're talking about it, I'm thinking of it as a real spiritual practice, which
Yes.
like none of that contributes to a spiritual practice. Like if you're building the ego and you're doing things for a power trip, or you're doing things to maliciously hurt other people, or or you're dehumanizing anybody, or you know, thinking some lives are not as important as other people's lives because of stories that you've told yourself and believe in, like I can't believe in that. I can't believe that that's any part of community, you know.
Sure,
So,
sure,
but I mean, it's happening maybe in a community like situation, you know. But like
sure.
when you talk about community, like those are the things that I'm, you know, I'm thinking. It's like all the things you said, like Atman, higher self, like that's where community went. That's where I think of community leading me to and supporting me. So.
Well, let's move it there. Then let's move our conversation there, because I'm there's, you know, there's a method to the madness, you know. The method may be questioned, but the madness is never questioned.
Never.
Never questioned. It's always deep. But so on one hand, you have the idea of a spiritual community, a sangha, right? Which we've you know talked about a little bit here, right? Being there for other people, being composed of people to support others, and so on and so forth, the seed, the soil, all of this. And I was trying to think of what's the opposite of a sangha, and I was like, oh, it's a cult. That's a cult, right? Where objective reality is questioned, right? Where non-believers are ostracized, and where one's own autonomy is diminished to almost nothingness. Not emptiness, that's a good one, but nothingness, right? Like
Nothingness.
that, all of that, like your own free will should be given over because of these various things, right? To this person. And holding on to anything, even your own insights, is proof of non-belief, you know? And so, unfortunately, to your point, what on one hand I'm referencing is community for building, community for growth, community of like-minded people who are also doing their own work of some way, shape, or form, and you are part of that, and there's a collective kind of resonance to this growth. On the other hand, you have, I guess you could say, like ignorant sanghas, you know, cult-like mentalities, tribal mentalities, you know, tribal
Yeah.
gatherings,
Which
people
like
who,
not like non-evolved.
yeah, I don't know if I want to
Like
call it if
or
I don't know if I want to call it evolved or not evolved, but I could say based on more selfish ideals, things that are benefit of oneself. Now, if someone's listening to this, you could say, well, your own self-development is literally has the word self in it. Yes, of course it does, but it's
But
based.
that's the eight limbs of yoga though. You have to start with self. You have to start with the physical to get to the higher, like it's a principle that's like found in many ways. You know, it's like you the discipline of the self is how you quiet, you know, quiet the mind to find that like higher thing that you're looking for, you know,
Sure.
that like you, the community is inspiring you to get to.
And I think in the way in which, you know, philosophically the two sides are, is that from the yogic perspective or from the perspective of Sangha, you change self to change society. And the other one, in the cult fashion or the tribalistic, maybe the tribalistic fashion, you change society to then have effect on self. And the changes that you want to see are inherently going to benefit you on one hand. On the other
Yeah,
hand,
that's self-centered. That would be like thinking of yourself like God, which like that's, you know,
correct.
that's like
Right. And
sick.
that's the short-sightedness. And so that is the kind of
Yeah.
downside of a non-practicing community, a tribe, if you will, or a cult, if you will, you know, in this way. And that there's plenty of this, right? And this is kind of what I'm talking about. So
Yeah.
whether it's on legacy media, whether it's on social media, whether it happens in conversation, or you know, wherever it's happening, this is the dangerous one, because it's pulling on the same tropes, or I want to call them tropes, we'll say on the same tendencies that we can reference the beginning of our conversation, the same desires that humans have to be in community with each other, the same genetic interconnectivity that we have, because we all need other people. Like, I didn't make my clothes, you didn't make your house, I didn't farm my food. Like, we're interrelated, and yet we feel separate. And so people who share the same beliefs make us feel generally closer together. But the negative side of that is that the groupthink can override your own ability to make your own decisions for yourself. And then you have to ask yourself, if you even get there, like, is this what I actually think? Is this what I actually believe? And so then religion becomes a corporation, you know, it becomes a hierarchy and all these types of things. And so, you know, you grew up in a church, and I wanted you to speak a little bit about this side. You don't got to throw nobody under the table or anything like that, but you have a deeper experience with this than I do because of how you grew up. And so I wanted you to, you know, open up a little bit about this if you wanted to.
About the limitations of the church.
Yeah, totally. Oh yeah, or the, not just a church, but like the community, you know, which a church or a practice is not a practice without the people in there practicing in it.
I mean, in my personal experience, I just felt like there was a limit hit for me, and I was really young whenever I realized it, that like, you know, I could hear the words that were being preached to like be kind and have unconditional love. And not that the community wasn't nice or whatever, but the real understanding of what that means, you know, like I can say this because like I was engaged really, really young, you know, and my whole church community was involved in that, you know, like one of the ladies at church made my wedding cake, my grandma made my wedding dress, you know, like and so like there was so much pressure, like even if they wouldn't have judged me, I just felt like there was so much shame and guilt if I didn't do things their way. Like, you know, it was so like, you know, like by the book, you know, and not saying that things shouldn't be done that way, but like, you know, if you are, whenever I think of community and support, like I didn't feel supported. I felt pressured that I just had to do it that way because that was the right way, you know? And so it really leaves, you know, I don't feel like it left room for me to understand and to grow into the person that I've become today. Like, I don't think that that community would have supported that in a lot of ways. And I today don't believe that you should guilt and shame people. You know, like I don't think that like there should be a preaching of a certain way. And then like maybe it's the community being humans that do it, where it's just like there is. It's like you know, they take everything so by the book. And as long as they're showing up for Sunday, like they're good people and they get to say, you know, what gets to go, what's right and what's wrong. And so through my own jo journey of yoga and Chinese medicine and just like understanding and readings of the Tao, you know, I see God infused everywhere. And like the idea of unconditional love and compassion, it feels good in my bones, which I felt like I did. It was there. Like when I was young and sitting in church, I remember thinking like there's something more here, you know, but you listen to the sermon, you know, and then yeah, it's like, oh, now it's time to collect money, you know, and like the church needs support, you know, and it there was a missing link and just was too materialized or too, I don't know what the word I'm looking for, you know.
Sure, yeah, superficial.
Yeah, superficial. And you know, I went back years later to with my grandpa when he was still alive to the church because I love whenever people sing gospel music, especially with like no instruments, you know. And like my grandma was an amazing singer and she could hit like these crazy high notes like an opera singer sometimes. And like I love gospel music. I love sitting in a church and listening to singing. And so I went for the singing with my grandpa when he was still alive, and the entire sermon was about tithing and giving money, and they were just basically resourcing money. And I was like, at that point, I'd been on my own journey with yoga and Chinese medicine, and so my understanding and my love for like a deeper spiritual way had grown. And I was really hoping to like really hear something from the Bible talking about like the unconditional love or like the patience of like that we have to do, and how like God isn't an unjust God because there's bad things that happen to people. It's just that that's the human life sometimes. And, you know, but it wasn't about that. And it made me so sad. I remember walking away from there, and I actually haven't been back to church since, like in an actual congregation. And, but yeah, it really, I was just so sad about that because, I think there's so much, there's so many beautiful stories in the Bible. Like I love, like, you know, like we always like not butt heads, but when we talk to things, I'm always relating things back to Jesus, because that's who lives in my heart and like who I, you know, look or talk about. But it doesn't mean that the other stories, like the other stories that I have picked up along the way from other things, don't fit in there just as perfect and like inspire me just as much, you know. So
yeah, I mean, this is the unfortunate part for people who are in, and we've talked about this on the podcast before, so this is not totally new, you know, but people who are lost in like conspiracy theory loops, right? People who are hyper political. Now, again, there are vast differences in ideology between various parties, and one could say that this policy is more compassionate and this policy is more just and this one is the more moral of the two and so on and so forth. Like, I'm not going to argue independent semantics, but the greater point is that, like, to be able to leave those things, to be able to step outside, and then you can return. Like how you said, once you sort of went back to church, you were hoping to hear something that of meaning, because that's why you went there. And then you had the experience that you did that was a reminder that, like, no, I've left this type of thing. And so you were able to see the kind of the detriments in that part of it. So
just a block, like a block. It's like, you know, it's like, you know, to understand something and to have like a principle of something, but not to see it transferred and action based, you know, like, and so it's like, if you're a human and you're, and I don't know, sometimes we butt heads on this, sometimes we agree, but like, if you're a human in human form, you're going to have the disposition to have greed and envy and jealousy and, you know, like the emotions that send the mind into, you know, fluctuations or whatever. And if you're not giving people tools to learn how to understand that about yourself, then you're just dealing with a large group of like humans that like are unregulated in their mind and controlled by their emotions, which those things, even if you want to not have non-judgment, if you don't have a practice and an understanding of how to get there, about how to work with your mind to get there, then you're just, there's no way around it, you know? And I feel like that's why I felt, you know, an insurmountable amount of like the guilt and the shame and the judgment, you know, even though I don't think those people wanted to be that way, they just couldn't avoid it because they didn't have tools. They didn't work on it, you know, like overcoming like the mundane life, go to work, have the house, you know, go to church on Sunday, you know? And so, and there's nothing wrong with that, but it's, you know, if you don't know, you don't know, you know?
Sure.
And so there was like a limitation of where the preaching stopped, and then it just, there was no more tools given for work, you know? It's like, if you come here, you're good, you know, you're going to heaven if you just show up here on Sunday and just try to be a kind person. But like, what does that actually mean, you know? And in my own spiritual community, like I've, you know, there's been people in my life that mirror things back to me and challenge me, and I'm so grateful for them. And, you know, learned about that kind of stuff and like how, just how big love is and compassion and hearing people and just really wanting to connect with people. So,
well, the crux of it is that like there's suffering, right? That's the crux.
Yeah.
And the ways in which we work with the various layers of suffering are often with other people, right? Mm-hmm. And so in this way, your community, whether we look at it as a sangha or as kind of like a tribe, that you get to show up with your sufferings, or maybe we can call it complaints, you know, for some people who are more politically inclined, you know.
but when
you have a shared resonance with that, the place that you gather, as you are saying, ideally would help you to work through them, would help you to work through those sufferings, would give you tools, would give you options, would give you teachings, would help you to foster insights that you could work your way through them, right? That's the kind of That's the nice part. The negative side to that is that you get people who have similar sufferings, but instead of doing the work internally, look to the outside as a scapegoat, right? And so sometimes when we're doing this, I go, oh yeah, this is the crux of the episode, and this is that, right? And that this is the difference between the two, is that a community in the way that which I'm describing in the beginning is one that does that, is one that drives you and everybody else back to the inside to work on this suffering together, to do it together. You're not doing it alone, right? And a big part of the suffering is that we feel like we are alone. Is that once we break that in utero connection with our mothers and we start to become more developed, that we can walk away from her, run away from her, right? Push her away, tell her or our parents, whomever raised you, no, right? And then you get responsibility, right? You know?
Would you say that's a differentiation of like maybe like cults are successful because the people that feel like they're suffering alone find like a person that's going to save them or like someone that like
Absolutely.
totally because I think healing comes from inside truly. Like you have to find it inside, you know, like that's where your happiness is going to come from. That's where it's going to heal. But these people that are vulnerable and so tired of suffering alone, they see this thing that they think is going to save them.
Totally.
And like I have like a best friend that I love to death named Dre, and I was like having a rough day one day talking to Dre, and I'll say this like a million times, but I called Dre and I'm just like talking about it, you know, and Dre is just like listening, and then Dre says, "Priscilla, ain't no one coming to save your ass, bitch." And I was like, "You're right. It can't happen that way. Like I have to do it myself, and you, but we do need help. We definitely
We need
need
help. Yeah.
we need help for sure. Yeah,
So
absolutely."
yeah, so there's a couple analogies here that I want to give because I like them. They said that like if you view yourself as a rock, you know, with all of your stuff very heavy, and I throw a rock into a river, the rock just sinks to the bottom, and that's just what happens to it. However, if I'm on a boat, I could put as many rocks as I want on this boat, and the boat won't sink to the bottom. It'll float along the rest of the river. And so we feel if we're on a boat with other rocks that we won't sink because they're with us. Unfortunately, boats can have holes. And also, the river can be leading us right off the end of a cliff. And so the reminder is, first, to remind yourself that you're not a rock. That's number one, and you're not going to sink, you know. I tell people that, like, and I've made this comment on the podcast before that, like, people who come to my practice, I could just tell them, I'm never going to need to see you again, but I'm going to charge you $1,000 for these next two sentences, which is a, by the way, you're getting this for free now. So, you know, my business idea is gone out the window.
Nobody heard it. They all stopped listening in 4 minutes. So you're
Probably,
good.
probably.
You're
Yeah. So we're just talking right now, but like, you're not alone. You're going to be fine. There is God. Pay and leave. You know, that's all that it is. But it is to say that, like, if you find other people who are, you know, have a similar kind of experiences, then you will be drawn together. And the question is with this collective energy of your sangha, of your community, of your tribe, of your cult, of whatever it is, what do you do with that energy? Do you remind each other then to be mindful people, to be compassionate people? Can you practice the people that you want to be seen as in the greater community, in the greater sangha, in the entire world, in the smaller one? Or do you get to stand together back to back and point at society, at all the ills in society, and clamor for change when you're unwilling to take that change on yourself? That's the question I have. And this is, you know, I like to be fair when we do this, and so I don't want to make everything seem all like, oh yeah, this is good, so therefore go look up Sangha and do something about it. No, it's not like that. It's to produce insight, really and truly, you know, this the inner kind of wise guy in there. I won't say wise man, I'll say wise guy, because then it sounds a little bit more nefarious and tricksterish. Would like to point out positives, but us but then also not be naive and to say that like something only has positivity. Mary Kay very famously, and when I mean famously, I mean to her students who knew her, and even on the podcast, I said before, like, everything has a light and a dark side. And so we're not selling any false bill of goods. I'm not promoting, Buddhism as better or worse than anything else in particular, but some of the concepts that are illuminated in there are, I believe, illuminated in different ways that resonate with me. And so I try and retranslate them into real life for people. So whether you're taking a yoga class or you're doing a meditation class or you go to some place to get some kind of teachings or hear a talk or whatever, remember that you are part of that group of people, but you still have your own independent mind to make your own decisions. Does that make
Perfect.
sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
So,
Oh, cool. Okay.
yeah, I feel pretty good about what we got going on here, Anything else you'd like to add before we get going? No, you're good. All right. Well, thank you so much for having this conversation with me. It's always a pleasure. And to our audience, thanks for tuning in. Thanks for listening. This was something that just came up earlier today. I didn't have a ton of time to prepare for it, so hopefully didn't feel too rushed. But something's better than nothing, at least. That's what I like to say. But I like to say a lot of things, so like, fuck
Yeah.
it, whatever.
I think no, I think you had some really good points and really good analogies and reminders. So it's important.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll
As
inspire
always,
someone.
say again.
Maybe they'll inspire someone.
Who knows? It's possible. As always, thank you everybody for tuning in. I really appreciate it. Priscilla, thank you for so much for coming on today. Again, like, comment, subscribe, hit us up on Instagram, the Gin and Tantra Podcast. Hit us up on email, the Gin and Tantra Podcast. Oh no, what? Gin and Tantra at gmail.com. Yeah, that's the one. To everybody who sends us, who gives us love, we definitely appreciate it. We are sponsored by our damn selves, which is awesome. And yeah, for Priscilla and Eric, who's not here, this is Daniel. We'll catch you guys in the next one. Good luck with finding some people who resonate with you. Peace.
You to get together. I want you to get together. Put your hands together one time. I want you to get together. I want you to get together.